Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I think it's 19. Archita Prabhu. Hari Bol. Archita, I think it's... Oh, okay, sorry. Thank you. I'm nervous. You got me scared there. Okay. Gamparya tan medya vivikta vritti. Gamparya tan medya vivikta vritti. Sada pluto da shayano vadhuta. Sada pluto da shayano vadhuta. Alakshita svar avadhuta vesho. Alakshita svar avadhuta vesho. Vritani shedi haritoshanani. Vritani chedi haritoshanani. Gamparya tan medya vivikta vritti. Sada pluto da shayano vadutaha. Alakshita svar avadhuta vesho. Britani chedi harito shanani. Vaishnavis. Gam earth. Paryatan traversing. Medya pure. Vivictivriti independent occupation for living. Sada always. Aplutaha sanctified. Adha on the earth. Shayanaha lying. Avadhutaha without dressing of the hair, etc. Alakshitaha without being seen. Swai alone. Avadhutavesha dressed like a mendicant. Vratani vows. Chere performed. Aditoshanani that please the Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. While so traversing the earth, he simply performed duties to please the Supreme Lord Hari. His occupation was pure and independent. He was constantly sanctified by taking his bath in holy places. Although he was in the dress of a mendicant and had no hair dressing nor a bed on which to lie. Thus, he was always unseen by various relatives. Purport. The first and foremost duty of a pilgrim is to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. While traveling as a pilgrim, one should not be worried about pleasing society. There is no need to depend on social formalities or occupation or dress. One should remain always absorbed in the function of pleasing the Lord. Thus, sanctified by thought and action, one is able to realize the Supreme Lord by the process of a pilgrim's journey. Om gana timaram dasha jananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam upakaramayam dadati swaparamti kam. So going through the translation here, line by line, Prabhupada says, while so traversing the earth, he simply performed duties to please the Supreme Lord Hari. So from this we can understand that when one is going on a pilgrimage, it's got a job description. You know, he had duties to perform to please the Supreme Lord. It's not like going on a vacation. You're just, you know, traveling around. It's not sightseeing. He had duties to perform to please the Supreme Lord Hari. His occupation was pure and independent. Occupation in the sense of his activities. Now, this is an interesting sentence, the next one. He was constantly sanctified by taking his bath in holy places. Although he was in the dress of a mendicant and had no hair dressing nor a bed on which to lie. I think what that sentence is trying to express is that as a mendicant, he didn't have any facility. You know, he didn't even have adequate facility to keep clean. You know, he couldn't keep his hair. He had no hair, no facility for hairdressing, no bed on which to lie. But despite the fact that he was basically, I mean, externally like a homeless person, when you're on a mendicant on a pilgrimage, you're moving around with no, you know, facility at all. He says he was sanctified by taking bath in the holy places. He was in the mode of goodness or beyond, despite the fact that he had no material facility, no way to really keep clean, no way to take care of his hair, no bedding, etc. And says that he was always unseen by his various relatives. So Vidura was a stepson. He wasn't a blood brother, say, of Dhritarashtra. He was born of a maidservant, but he was considered a Kshatriya. You know, he had in the previous slokas we heard he had a bow, you know, before he left the palace, he hung his bow on the door or whatever. There's another place, I read ahead last night, he was referred to as a king. It said King Vidura in one of the translations. He's referred to as King Vidura. So Kshatriyas are opulent, you know, the royal order, they're opulent. And But when he's traveling as a mendicant, he wouldn't even be recognized by his various relatives, simply because ordinarily they're used to seeing him in, you know, the regal dress, the royal dress, very nicely outfitted and like that. And now he's really accepting a very humble sort of a presentation in terms of how he's, his appearance. You know, he's taking off the royal garments, dressed like a mendicant, just moving around from one place to another, no fixed place to eat or sleep. And so he wouldn't even be recognized by his various relatives. So that's the translation, just to try to make it a bit clearer. And the purport, Papa says, the first and foremost duty of a pilgrim is to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. And, of course, that's the first and foremost duty of everyone, right? To satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. And as I was reading this translation, and particularly the purport, it really struck me how similar, you know, being a pilgrim is on a pilgrimage to being a sadhaka engaged in devotional service. It's essentially the same thing. You know, as we're reading, you'll hear. You can sort of paraphrase in your mind how similar it is. That, you know, the first and foremost duty of a pilgrim is to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. Well, the first and foremost duty of a sadhaka is to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. While traveling as a pilgrim, one should not be worried about pleasing society. Well, while engaging in devotional service as a sadhaka or a devotee, same thing. We shouldn't be worried about pleasing society. You know, we're just like one example that pops to my mind about when devotees used to do Harinam, and they were trying to do it in such a way that it would be pleasing to the people, the crowds, you know. And Prabhupada said, no, Harinam is for the pleasure of Krishna. Just do the chanting for the pleasure of Krishna, and don't worry about pleasing the crowds. You know, we're not meant to be pleasing the crowds. There is no need to depend on social formalities or occupation or dress. So similarly, you know, in the execution of our sankirtan activities, we don't depend on social formalities. We go and chant. We don't wait. We don't have any invitations. We don't wait for an invitation, and we don't get any invitations. We don't get any permission. We just go and do it. We're sort of like defying social formalities to a certain extent, or certainly not being very concerned about them, because you know normally you get, like for instance for our sankirtan activities, our book distribution activities, we just go and start doing it. Normally you want to go and get permission or something like that. Well, you know, we're not able really to do that because, you know, there's that expression, it's easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission. Unfortunately, in the material world, quite often, it's a good sentiment and everything, and when it's possible, it's nice to do it. But people just take it as an opportunity to give you a hard time. There's another expression, let sleeping dogs lie. Sometimes it's just better to go out and do what you got to do and wait for somebody to tell you that you're doing the wrong thing and then apologize and then get permission like that. So anyway, devotees aren't overly concerned. We're not like, what's the word, renegades or something like that, but we can't be overly concerned with social formalities, the activity, the dress, right? We have our own standards. We have our own things that we're going by, and it's not, if it tallies up with what, you know, going on outside, wonderful. We don't mind that, but we're going to do things in such a way, you know, our activity, our dress, our et cetera, our appearance, like that. We're doing that to please Guru and Krishna, not to please the society. Our concern is that we're going to do this in such a way that Prabhupada and the predecessor acharyas are pleased, not overly concerned with the reaction of society. You could say, well, isn't that counterproductive to preaching? No, not really, because the success of our preaching is not dependent upon pleasing the minds of the conditioned souls. The success of our preaching is dependent upon pleasing the transcendental senses of the spiritual master and the predecessor acharyas. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, When poor Prabhupada says that the pure devotee is always thinking about how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. And Krishna, being pleased by that, he enlightens the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. Okay. So in other words, people become devotees not because we've pleased them, you know, we please their mind and senses. No, people become devotees because the devotees have been sincere about trying to preach Krishna consciousness, and Krishna, Guru and Krishna from within the heart, reciprocate. They're reciprocating with the sincere efforts of the devotees, and they're enlightening the general populace from within by their causeless mercy, and then people are coming. That's my understanding of how it works, you know. Reading on here. It says, one should always remain absorbed in the function of pleasing the Lord. No, same, you know, just saying the same, elaborating the same thing. Thus, sanctified by thought and action, one is able to realize the Supreme Lord by the process of a pilgrim's journey. So, once again, the analogy. Thus, sanctified by thought and action, always meditating on the instruction of the spiritual master, trying to execute it. That's the same thing. One is able to realize the Supreme Lord by the process of sadhana bhakti, pilgrim. So basically, we're pilgrims. What's the difference? You know, Vidura was moving around from one place to another physically. You know, he was changing his geographical location. But as sadhakas, we're also moving. We're not necessarily moving from one place to another physically, you know, with our physical body. We're moving around. But the real pilgrimage is a pilgrimage of consciousness. That's the real pilgrimage. You see? That's what's really the important thing here. He becomes able to... You don't realize the Supreme Lord by moving your body around from one place to the other. Right? You realize the Supreme Lord by purifying your consciousness and having Krishna reveal himself to you. See? Okay, as far as the pilgrimage goes, that's... It's part of the process. But the real thing is not that you just move your body around from one place to another. The real thing is that you get purified in your consciousness, and then you realize the Supreme Lord. So, very similar. So, you know, in that sense, we're all pilgrims. We're on a journey, just like Vidura was on a journey. We're on a journey. You know, the journey is doesn't necessarily have to involve moving the body around from one destination to another. Another very important point that's kind of brought out in the purport here. Is that Vidura was performing austerity in the process of executing his pilgrimage. So in the same way, sadhakas, we have to perform austerity. We have to be prepared to accept tapasya, because it's tapasya. You're used to being a king living in a royal palace, and the next thing you know, you're giving up that clothing. You're giving up your, you know, comforts of the palace. You're just moving around. Like I said, you know, like the translation says, he had no bed which to lie down on. He didn't know where he was going to sleep that night. And when he did sleep, he didn't have a bed to sleep on, no facility to comb his hair, what he was going to eat. So he was prepared to accept austerities, perform austerities, tapasya. So that has to be there, you know. Vidura adopted that to successfully execute his pilgrimage, and the same way, as sadhakas, we have to be prepared to perform tapasya. And actually, tapasya is like the active ingredient in devotional service. If we don't perform tapasya, you stay like on the platform of gyan. You don't get the realization. You know, we have to go from gyan to vigyan, and tapasya is the active ingredient. It's what Krishna is looking for. It's what the spiritual master is looking for. It's what actually attracts the attention of the you know, guru and Krishna, so that they feel inspired. They feel pleased to. Atesham eva anukampartam aham magyana jam tamaha nasyami atma bhavashto gyana depena bashvata. Krishna says to out of compassion for them, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. See, so when the devotees perform tapasya, you know, Guru and Krishna are aware of that, and then they purify the consciousness of the devotee. They enlighten that devotee from within. So that has to be there. And that's the, you know, so Vidura had to do that. And following in his footsteps, we have to do that in order to be successful in spiritual life. And it's required for us, and it's to be successful in our own spiritual life, and it's also required for us to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, right? The potency to inspire others, you know, will comes from that as well. So there's a there was a song, probably, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years ago in the material world, by this fellow, Burt Bacharach. He's kind of a famous songwriter, and it goes, I'm not going to try to sing it for you, don't worry. It goes, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. And he goes, next thing, and he repeats that thing, and he says, not just for some, but for everyone, for always, for everyone, everywhere, something like that. So he's talking about kindness, you know, and he's saying that's the one thing. You know, that's the world needs. It's the only thing that there's not enough of. So we would agree with him on that point. But I will go with, and it's good that he's talking about love, and not in the sense of, you know, the sensual physical attraction necessarily between the opposite sexes, or these days the same sexes, or whatever, you know. But he's talking about kindness, and that's good. But we'll go with Prabhupada's definition. We'll apply the same. We'll agree with his conclusion that, yeah, love is what is just too little of in the world today. But we're going to go with Prabhupada's definition of what that is. And maybe Prabhupada said many things about that, but in this book called The Science of Self-Realization, in one of those chapters in the back, you know, towards the end, there's a section where Prabhupada says, people are suffering for want of... No, Prabhupada goes, real love says, people are suffering for want of Krishna consciousness. So let us do something to help them understand the true value of life. So that's love. Love is when you do something to help people understand the true value of life. You perform the austerity, the tapasya. It's generally not convenient. And so that's what we have to do. And we're doing that. You know, this whole society's movement is set up for that purpose. We're trying to do something so that people can understand the real value of life. And we're doing that by distributing prasadam. We're doing that by distributing books. Actually, books are also a form of prasadam. You know, there's prasadam that you taste, and there's prasadam that you read. Okay? So that's, you know... But then there's also, and we're doing those things. And then there's another type of prasadam. There's prasadam that you feel. In other words, okay, the foodstuffs, that's prasadam. And we have the faith that if people just eat this, they're going to get spiritual benefit. That's why we distribute prasadam, right? And we also have the faith that if people just get Prabhupada's books and read these books, it's going to purify their consciousness. Whether they're, you know, spiritually inclined or not. Just same thing with the prasadam. It works. Our faith is that works. It purifies somebody whether they believe it or not. And the same thing, if they read Prabhupada's books, just even if they're reading just to get some information, what is this all about anyway, you know? Their conscience is getting purified because it's prasadam. Prabhupada's words are prasadam. The food is prasadam. And also another thing that's prasadam is the friendliness of devotees. See? That's important too. I'm going to elaborate upon that in a second. But if you analyze, so we're trying to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that people don't feel like they're being proselytized. Because you might have noticed people don't like, generally speaking, to be proselytized. They feel it's an intrusion, an invasion of their space, so to speak. See? So prasadam. Prasadam is preaching, but it's something that's done in such a way that people don't feel like they're being proselytized. And same thing. With the books, you know, they're getting the bhakti. Prabhupada's books are just, the intention is is give people the philosophy, but it's bhakti. We're, just like we're not interested in just feeding people food, vegetarian food, we're interested in injecting bhakti into them, right? So in the same way, when you give somebody one of Prabhupada's books, if they read the books, yeah, they're being given the opportunity to become familiar with the philosophy, but they're being injected with bhakti, right? Without them even realizing it. So, we're trying to... It's proselytizing, but without them being aware of it. We're trying to get them to accept. So, friendship is an important aspect of it. And that should be there among devotees. You know, this like the nice friendly mood. In the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's that verse, Much Chitta Pranab. Wait a second, 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Got it this time. Buddhayantas Parashpranam. Devotees derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlightening one another, conversing about me. So, you know, charity begins at home. Devotees should share Krishna consciousness with each other and just be friendly. Just be friendly. The point I'm trying to make is it's not mundane. Just like when you give somebody some prasadam, it's not mundane. Somebody could say, oh, you're just giving them some food. What's the big deal? No, that's transcendental food. See? Or somebody could say, oh, you're just giving somebody some books, just some information. No, it's bhakti. When you give somebody prasadam, the one that we taste, you're giving them bhakti. When you give somebody one of Prabhupada's books, you're giving them bhakti. And when devotees are friendly to each other, to guests that come, and to people that we meet out on the street, that friendship is prasadam. It's bhakti. It's not a mundane thing. At least that's my thesis for this morning. That it's every bit as transcendental, it's every bit as spiritual as, giving them a burfi that's offered to Krishna or a book. And people need that, right? Just like there's prasadam for the taste buds, there's prasadam for the mind, that's the books. For the taste buds, it's what's offered to Krishna on the altar. And there's prasadam for the heart. People want to be liked and feel appreciated, etc. So when devotees are friendly to each other, to guests that come, to people outside, you're distributing prasadam for the heart, and that's a really important thing, I think. And Prabhupada was a great example of that. Prabhupada, of course, did incredible preaching and explained the philosophy amazing way. But when you watch the Prabhupada memories, which we've all watched a lot of them because we have the good fortune of having Siddhanta live right here and basically in our community, and he was showing, watched him for weekends for a couple of years. You see a lot of the devotees, they there's a lot of glorification of Prabhupada as a great preacher, great like the philosophy aspect of it. But a lot of devotees, the glorification of Prabhupada that they share is what a kind and loving person Prabhupada was. You see? That's for a lot of the devotees, right? I mean, you've heard those memories. That they're kind of like meditating on those qualities of Prabhupada. That's really what impressed them a lot. See? So that's an important thing. Prabhupada was like in the ring, so to speak, when he was here in the Vyasasana, it's philosophy, right? But when he was in his general dealings, it seems like, he was very, people liked him as a person. The devotees who had the good fortune of being able to interact with Prabhupada on a one-to-one basis really appreciated how thoughtful, how considerate, how kind, how humble, what a loving kind of a person Prabhupada was. See? So that's, Prabhupada was the perfect example of preaching, but people didn't feel proselytized. The disciples didn't feel like Prabhupada was just hammering them all the time with the philosophy. No, he attracted them by his personal qualities like that. So that's an example of that. So I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to say. Does anybody have any questions? and the kirtan firsthand, I saw go up, and then Mother Shamapriya. Yep, that looks like Mike's coming.
I just had a question about the text. Patir Prabhu gave class, was that yesterday or the day before?
Saturday.
Last time, oh yeah, it was Saturday. So last time he spoke, he was talking about how the Archivigraha is very powerful. He said that the Archivigraha is even more merciful than Krishna himself. That's what he said. And then he was saying how that Vidura set a good example that Krishna was on the planet at that time, but he decided to go on pilgrimage to go to different tirthas to see the Archivigraha form because he didn't feel himself qualified to see Krishna himself. So I was a little bit skeptical about that statement. My understanding is that Vidura...
Did that statement come from the purport, or that statement
that
came from Patri?
Hit from Patri.
Okay.
My understanding, and it might not be correct, this is a question. This was going on right before the Battle of Kurukshetra, and it seems to me, just like how Balaram, he didn't want to get involved with either side, with either the Pandavas or the Kauravas. He didn't want to fight in the war, because he was kind of neutral to both sides. So he also went on pilgrimage, Balaram. So it seems like Vidura perhaps took a similar route. You know, if he would have just went to Krishna himself, perhaps he would have got entangled in, you know, dealing with the war somehow. So it seems like he went on pilgrimage perhaps because of that reason. Do you have any comment?
I understand your question. I don't know the answer. Does anybody know the answer? Was Vidura's motive for... He's suggesting that possibly that what Patri said about Vidura's motive for going on pilgrimage and not going directly to see Krishna because he felt himself unqualified to do so was not that. He suggested that it was something more similar to Balaram. Balaram didn't want to get involved with the politics. You know, he knew that Krishna was siding with the Pandavas and he had a friendship with Duryodhana. So he went on pilgrimage and he avoided the issue. And he's suggesting, right, that Vidura was doing a similar thing by going on pilgrimage. He was avoiding the issue altogether. If he would have went directly to Krishna, it would have been like he was siding with the Pandavas, and that would have confirmed all the accusations that the Kauravas were making. All the accusations that Duryodhana was making, that he was a spy, he was an infidel, like that. So he just avoided the whole issue by going on a pilgrimage. Now, he's asking, is that what I think? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know what Vidura's motive was, and I can't remember reading anything about that. It sounds like Mother Shamapriya looks like she's eager to... Wait.
Yeah. He said in the purport that he took it as an opportunity. He saw it as Krishna's blessing that he could get out of that situation of being stuck with Duryodhana and all those people and dedicate his life to Krishna.
Okay. Anybody else? Archita. Took an opportunity. No, okay, but specifically that point of why didn't he just go directly to see Krishna? Okay, we can understand that, yeah, he definitely took an opportunity. But why didn't he just go directly to see Krishna? Because he already had a relationship with Krishna, apparently. And why did he choose to, rather than do that, tour around on pilgrimage?
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Archita. Enlighten us,
it's
please.
A multifaceted situation. Again, uh-huh. As conditioned souls, we try to always see black or white. We don't see all the shades of gray in between. These two things are not mutually exclusive. You can want to avoid the politics, and at the same time, you can feel yourself not pure enough to be with Krishna. They're not mutually exclusive. And also, the pure devotees, when they see the Archivigraha, they're seeing Krishna. You see? Prabhupada right here said, he's seeing Dwarkadish not as a statue. He said, when you have some problem, you come before these deities, he was talking about these deities, and say, sir, this is my problem. And you speak to the deity, and the deity will give you the answer. So the devotees, when they travel on pilgrimage and they're seeing all these various arts of forms, they're not thinking that, okay, here's a stone form of Krishna, but the real Krishna is in, you know, Hastinapura. No, they're seeing Krishna wherever they go. That's what makes a pure devotee. They're seeing Krishna at every moment. So these two motives are not mutually exclusive. Again, as a pure devotee, they're very humble, so they think themselves unfit. So all of that is happening. It's just like with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was the most humble, standing in line with his own disciples to go to the bathroom. But at the same time, he knew he was the acharya for the world. It seems mutually exclusive. How can you be humble and stand in line to go to the bathroom and at the same time know that you know everything and you can tell anybody anything? And he had the right answer for everyone. Talking about memories, there's one that hasn't been released yet, but I'll give a little hint. Yogeshwar, he was remembering when Donovan, the famous singer, came to Prabhupada with his girlfriend. And they were sitting in the room with Prabhupada. And at first, Donovan was just staring. He wasn't saying anything.
Donovan was what?
Donovan. He was a famous singer, just like practically on the levels of the Beatles or the Stones or something like that.
Okay.
Maybe a lot of people nowadays don't know him, but he was very famous. And then after some time, I was just staring and Prabhupada looking back. And Prabhupada said, "So, you're a very good musician. I will give you the lyrics and you write the music." You see? Prabhupada always had the right thing for everybody. Why? Because he surrendered to Krishna. Krishna, from within the heart, gives him the right words for everybody. So that when we're dealing with pure devotees, we're not dealing with mundane situations of, you know, this consideration or that consideration. Whatever they do is prompted by Krishna from within. In other words, Vidura went on pilgrimage because that's what Krishna wanted him to do. If Krishna wanted him to come directly to him, he would have gone directly to Krishna. But Krishna wanted him to go on pilgrimage, so he went on pilgrimage.
Thank you. That was a fabulous comment. Sachidanoi Prabhu. Thank you. That really... Sachidanoi.
Thank you, Prabhu. Considering time, place, and circumstances, Vidura, obviously, one thing that I can get from, you know, these teachings is his absorption in Krishna consciousness, in whichever way he was. While he was also even in the palace, mm-hmm. he probably was not dressed as when he went to pilgrimage. And what I want to say also as an observation is that state of abadut sometimes can be misunderstood. Even devotees sometimes, I see personally, you know, certain things that happen that people cannot relate to that. We are living in a particular place with a particular format, social standards in which we have to either, you know, like, for example, yesterday we went to a big parade and it requires to get a permit to get in that parade. We have Ratha Yatra. We have to have, permits. So sometimes due to circumstances like now with COVID, that we go to the college or universities. In some places, they don't care, but we should still work and cooperate with the government to do all these things properly, not like an abadut type, and dressing and different things. But the absorption of a vidura, definitely that's like a key for me to say, yes, I want to take that part. And at the same time, dress properly, act properly, behave properly, and just that aspect. Because I did have some observation. One time I was doing Sankirtan with one devotee and I was looking for him and suddenly he was in the parking lot sleeping in the middle between the cars. And I'm looking, where is he at? All the cars there. He was in between the cars in the parking lot. And I thought, my God, you know, like, he says, I'm renounced. I said, no, that's not being renounced, Prabhu. That's being foolish. I'm sorry to tell you, but look. And, you know, another devotee, one time, we're driving here in the 10 West. The traffic was so heavy. So he said, okay, chant Hare Krishna. I said, what are you going to do? He just went to the side where no one will go and just driving, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I thought, what is this? So what I'm saying is that time, place, and circumstance, but properly applied and not imitate, you know, someone like Vidura.
Okay.
Even for getting permits, we need to go and work with the government. We have to cooperate. And then, in some cases, maybe, you know, we do certain things like in our Sankirtan ourselves. You know, COVID right now, they don't care that much. Yeah, we do that. Okay. Maybe.
Mother Shyam Priya is pretty eager to say something, so let's give her an opportunity.
Okay, so it kind of connects with what Sachi was saying. When you were saying, because we live in Los Angeles, right? So in Los Angeles, when you say a word like homeless, which kind of picture does everyone get? Now, Vidura was not living like a homeless person. He was a renounced person who gave up the prison-like palace and went to live in God's house, which means he slept underneath the stars. He took bath in the purest of water, like the holy rivers of India, and he slept on Mother Earth. That's not like a homeless person living down underneath the 4 or 5 in the filth and dirt.
Superficially.
We need to understand that, you know, these sadhus, they live a life of a noble life, and that's what Vidura was doing. So it's just the imagery, because you said homeless, I'm like, oh my God, because we deal with a lot of homeless here, and when we say avadut, it's also not necessarily in India, only crazy people are dirty. Everyone takes bath and shower. All the sadhus, they take bath and shower 3 times a day. It's only crazy people who you see like living down like on the street, those filthy, you know, druggy people. That's not what sadhus are like. So I just wanted to straighten that out.
Okay, good. Thank you.
It's a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's a good. Okay, anybody else have anything they'd like to add? Archita, final point.
Business of Sankirtan, and we're not a society of independent actors. There is an authority structure that Prabhupada himself established before he left. The devotees were asking him this, and that Prabhupada said, talk to your GBC, ask your temple president. He wanted to establish that line of authority. We're not a movement of independent actors. So on this business of permission or not permission, this and that, whatever the authority says, that's what we should do. It's not really up to every Sankirtan devotee to do whatever they want. What is the authority stating in this circumstance? If you're going to colleges, does the authority say, go to the authorities of the college and get permission? Then do that. If the authorities say, no, don't bother about that, just go set up your table and see what happens, then do that. It's not up to every Sankirtan devotee to do whatever they want. This is the problem we're running into. We're becoming a society of independent actors. Prabhupada set up a BBT. He said, buy books from the BBT. And he showed his formula. It wasn't hidden. Whatever the books cost, I'm going to double it, and that extra money I'm going to use for funding my temples and other ISKCON projects. Even when Prabhupada was here, people were trying to get around that. Temple presidents wanted to just print books themselves. Prabhupada said, no, you're going to destroy the whole thing. Now that Prabhupada is gone, people are using it as an excuse. The BBT books are too expensive. We're going to buy from some other entity because they sell cheaper. They're destroying Prabhupada's structure. So my point is there's a structure. International Society for Krishna Consciousness has a structure. If you don't like something, try to work it out. But don't go outside, Prabhupada said. Never leave. So we're not a society of independent actors. You have... So if you're a Prabhupada Nuga, you're always saying Prabhupada this and Prabhupada, follow what Prabhupada gave in every circumstance. And in terms of dress, one story I'll finish with, Mukunda Maharaj told, that he saw one devotee in London. He was dressed up nicely in suit and tie to go and deal with the government about some issue. And he turned to Prabhupada and said, is this all right? And Prabhupada said, yes. First dress, then address. Prabhupada, you said you can wear nice clothes, but you must always have tilak and flag.
Hare. All right, thank you. All right. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.